Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast on a Tuesday. The Browns opening up their mandatory minicamp today. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. We were all out in Berea, of course, at minicamp. We watched practice. We talked to a few players. We heard from Coach Kevin Stefanski. So a full day in Berea. So we're just going to do this the way we always like to recap these days. We're just going to go around the horn and throw out some takeaways. So Mary Kay, why don't you get us started here?
Well, first of all, I think I had mentioned on a podcast that I was hoping to actually be at the first day of Browns mini camp because I went to Quebec City for my daughter's graduation. She's in a she was in a Cirque du Soleil type school to do performances of that kind, and she graduated after 3 years in Quebec City, and it was a wonderful weekend. And then I got up at 2:30 this morning in Quebec, got on a 5:15 flight. And I was in my car at the airport parking lot at 10:14 for the opening of mini camp, which we're allowed in around 10:30, 10:45. So it was perfect timing. Got there. I can't believe it worked out like that. Air travel doesn't usually work like that anymore, but it worked out great. So I was happy to be there. And
I would like to just add that Mary Kay was there before I was there, and I was not traveling in from Canada. So that's how quickly she got back.
Yeah. And I would also like to add that I've pretty much been up since 2:30 this morning. So if I drag a little bit or slur my words a little bit, it's because I'm hitting the wall. But anyways, so my I would have to say that one of my biggest takeaways from today wasn't something that happened on the field. It was really off the field. I land in the CLE to find out that Greg Newsome and Perrion Winfrey had been robbed at gunpoint. Greg Newsome gets his car stolen at gunpoint, gets the jewelry taken off of him and stolen. Demetric Felton had his car stolen on Sunday. So I arrived to this bit of controversy with the Cleveland Browns. And so, of course, I requested for the group, and I'm sure a lot of other people did too, but I requested Greg Newsome and I requested Perrion Winfrey for the group. We were told that they were not going to talk. They did not want to talk about this. As it turns out, Perrion Winfrey wasn't even outside at this practice, and we don't really know why yet. We don't know why he wasn't out outside. What we do know about Perrion Winfrey is that he was arrested in April for misdemeanor assault. And, you know, the Browns probably were not too thrilled that he was out late on early Monday morning. The robbery happened at 3:30 on Monday morning. So I would have to think that they have him on a little bit of a tight leash right now and a little bit of thin ice. And they're probably not happy with the fact that, you know, that he was around for this sort of thing to happen. But the biggest takeaway, you know, in my mind from it was some of the things that Myles Garrett said. And Myles Garrett really talked about the fact that I asked him, you know, are you dismayed that something like this is going on in your beloved adopted hometown? And he said, no, I'm not dismayed. In my mind, he said, you know, this is an opportunity for us. This shows that we have more work to do in the community. We know that he's a humanitarian. We know he's a social activist. We know he cares about mankind and the human condition and people you know, bettering themselves and all those kinds of things. So for things like this to be going on in our community, he just said it's an opportunity for us to get out there and to do more work and to tell the good news of, you know, that this kind of behavior isn't what you need to be doing. That's not what you need to do. And so, you know, he just, I don't know, I thought that was very profound and very mature of him to speak of it in those terms. That was my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, Ashley, we've talked about Miles a little bit over the last few years, how he's sort of found his voice in a lot of ways. And, you know, he talked about Jim Brown a little bit today, too. I'm not sure if we might end up touching on that a little bit later. But he's really found his voice. And I'm sure Greg and Perrion and Dimitrik, but especially Greg and Perrion, were pretty rattled to being out there on the field. And Miles, he is one of your defensive leaders. So he kind of has to speak for the group a little bit in that setting, and he certainly did today.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this for Miles the last, like, couple of years, I think, you know, when things are going wrong or something happens, like, whether it's, you know, when he, after he flipped his car, like, we heard from him at the podium, I believe, that same week, like, the accident happened early in the week, and he talked, like, his normal day on Friday. He spoke after that. He was one of the first players we heard from after the Deshaun Watson trade went down, if my memory is correct. He was, like, one of the first, you know, reigning players that we heard from, and he spoke at length about that. He talked at length about gun violence last year. Like, he obviously was the one who talked at length about his feelings about wishing Odell Beckham Jr. had stayed on the team back in 2021. Like, for me, that was the kind of, you know, I was newer to the beat, but obviously familiar with Miles Garrett and realizing, like, okay, he's, like, not afraid to say something if it's on his mind, kind of after that point. And I think this was just, like, the latest iteration of almost, like, that elder statesman of the team. And sounds funny to say because he's still, like, relatively young. But he is, like, if something goes wrong on this team or something goes right on this team, like, Miles Garrett is the one you expect to hear from, I think, for me. And today just kind of, like, underscored that, even though he wasn't involved with this. Like, I thought he got up there, said all the right things you would expect, like, a defensive leader to say, and handled it really well, even though, again, he wasn't involved in this.
And Mary Kay, Kevin addressed it too, just to kind of stay on this topic. And he said something a little similar, not quite as strong as Miles was, but then he also talked about just this being a teaching opportunity. And, you know, you got to remember, these are young guys, and sometimes they maybe have to be reminded that, you know, you're a young, rich athlete, you're well-known in Cleveland, like, you could be a target. And so I'm sure that those are some of the discussions that Kevin is having with his players behind the scenes, is kind of using this as a teaching tool, especially because everybody came out of it okay, obviously. You know, Greg is down a car, but at least he's physically okay. Everybody's physically okay. So now this sort of becomes a teaching moment too.
Yeah, that's, you know, the number one thing that Miles and Kevin emphasized with it was that these guys came out of it okay. And when you're dealing with being robbed at gunpoint, a lot of times it doesn't have a safe and happy ending. And so everybody's got to be very, very grateful about that. And we also know, I mean, and I put this in my story that, you know, Miles knows something about being grateful to be alive, because he did flip that Porsche last September multiple times and very easily could have, you know, lost his life or his ability to walk or whatever. And so, you know, he has a newfound appreciation for life. And I'm sure that Greg Newsome and Perrion Winfrey are feeling similar today. I mean, I commend Greg for being out there on the practice field today. I'm sure he has to be very, very rattled by this, you know, to have an experience where, you know, you're having a gun pointed at you and, you know, and you could lose your life. That is very, very, very serious. And as Kevin Stefanski pointed out, it's a violent crime. And, you know, you need people like this, you know, off the streets. And so it does shine a light on some of that stuff. They, Kevin really commended the Cleveland Police Department for their work that they're doing on it. And you know, I just think, like Miles said, there is more work to be done. But in terms of the teaching moment that we're speaking of right now, it comes at a time when the Browns are about to send forth 90 players out into all parts of the United States and the world for the next 6 weeks. And it is another cautionary tale for these players. It's an opportunity for Kevin Stefanski to say, you've got to be in the right place at the right time. you know, probably best to wrap it up sometime before 3:30 in the morning. You know, now we always have a debate about this in the media room. And that is, you know, the old saying, nothing good ever happens at midnight. And our good friend Scott Petrick always laughs and says plenty of good things happen after midnight. But you know,
a classic Scott line.
Exactly. So we always, you know, we always goof around about some of that kind of stuff. But this obviously in this case was a very, very serious situation. It's an opportunity for Kevin Stefanski to remind his 90 players that you have to be in the right places. This is your profession. This is your job. Don't put yourself in harm's way. And also, I'm sure there's got to be some consternation over Perrion Winfrey right now and how, like I said before, he was already on thin ice. They can't be happy about this.
Yeah, I mean, nobody expects these guys to be home and in bed by 11 o'clock. They're all young, pretty rich. You know, they're NFL players. You know, we aren't unrealistic about this. These guys are going to be out. They're going to be out late, especially when they don't have any place to be the next day. You know, but again, a lot of it is just make sure you understand, like I said, or like you could be a target because you are young and rich and famous. So that's just, I think that's probably the teaching moment in all of this. Okay, Ashley, what did you take away from today?
Yeah, my takeaway has to do with Amari Cooper. I think we saw in action today this idea that they're ramping him up, right? But they've been really in no rush to do so. But today we did see him do 7-on-7 drills, 11-on-11 drills. He was in red zone drills and made like a really nice touchdown catch. It was like on the second pass from Deshaun Watson in that red zone period that closed out practice. And like it just underscores how his recovery has gone. You know, he told us in April that he underwent core muscle surgery back in February. It was like about an 8-week recovery, but you know, he has to ramp up after that. He talked more about how there haven't been any hiccups in his recovery, at least none that you would expect or wouldn't expect. And then someone asked him if he would be, you know, ready for the full contact practices and training camp. And he just kept it short and said, God willing, like it certainly seems like he is trending that way. But I liked what, you know, Kevin Stefanski said about him and when he was asked about the red zone period and what he did during that. And he said it looked like the old Amari. And I think that was true because when we saw him with that core muscle injury, those final like 6 games of the season or whatever it was, a little less than that, you could notice a difference. Like he wasn't that super strong route runner. You could tell he was in pain. He admitted it at the time. He admitted it again today. So I think it just underscores that, hey, this is healing right so far and he's on the right track.
Yeah, Mary Kay, Amari just looks different. You know, I just thought that today watching practice, you know, we've watched a couple OTAs already this season. And now Amari's out there for the first time doing teams. So it just looks so easy for Amari. And, you know, it's supposed to look easy in the spring. But he just glides, just catches the football with ease. Just everything looks so easy for him in these settings. And it was really good to see number 2 out there kind of running routes and making plays and ending up in the end zone and being one of Deshaun's favorite targets.
Yeah, and you know what? I thought it carried over into the press conference that he did with us because towards the end of last season, when he was struggling on the field, but staying out there and playing and giving it his all and doing everything that he had to be available for Deshaun and for his team, he's really good about that. He doesn't miss games. It's really pretty incredible to go back and look over his career and see that he has missed very, very few football games in his 8 years. And so I thought it carried over into his availability where he was just relaxed. He was at ease. He was smiling. He was jovial and, you know, he was in a good mood. I think he feels like himself again. You know, and that he just, of course, was never going to use anything as an excuse last year because that's just not how he is. He's a pro's pro. He never let on how much he was hurting in those last 6 games, but he was hurting plenty. And, you know, now he can go back and say, yeah, it was pretty bad, but you know, he was pretty fun to talk to today. And that was good. It was good to see the smile on his face, the light in his eyes a little bit and, sort of get, you know, that best version of Amari.
Okay, I'm going to actually, you know what? Let's do one more Amari topic here because Mary Kay, you did ask him about DeAndre Hopkins, and so while we're on the topic of Amari, let's we got to talk about DeAndre Hopkins on this podcast. That should be our goal every day until he signs somewhere. We are talking about DeAndre Hopkins in some form or fashion. But Amari is a pretty big voice in all of this, because obviously if DeAndre Hopkins showed up, that means less footballs for Amari Cooper. But he didn't seem to mind that. He seemed to be open to having another big time elite receiver to pair with.
Yes. I mean, he admitted, of course, that it would take some reps away from him, some targets away from him. In some ways, there's some overlap in the skill set. But still, if you have two guys like that on the football team, Amari's a four-time Pro Bowler. DeAndre Hopkins is a five-time Pro Bowler. Each of those two guys has had 6 1,000-yard seasons. These are statistics that you don't find in a player very often. So he knows what it would be like to have another star wide receiver like that out there. What does it mean? It means an opportunity to possibly go to the Super Bowl. It gets you one step closer to the Super Bowl. And really, that's everyone's ultimate goal. That's what they want. So he would welcome him with open arms. He understands what it means. He has no problem whatsoever with Deshaun Watson lobbying for him. It doesn't detract from how Deshaun feels about Amari Cooper. It's just another amazing football player that is out there available, and one, of course, that has great chemistry with Deshaun and that Deshaun would like to see on the team. Amari is all for it, and I think he would genuinely welcome it.
He doesn't have much more to accomplish, Ashley. I mean, he's made Pro Bowls. He's thought of as one of the best receivers in the game, you know, wherever you want to put him. Winning a Super Bowl, still on that list. You know, having that playoff success, still on that list. And I think he understands. I mean, Amari, I'd imagine, is very aware of his legacy.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, these guys all, like, the good receivers, I feel like, all know about one another and understand, like, how important those Super Bowls are as a part of your legacy, right? Like, I think it's something a lot of guys on this team are after for that very reason. Like, obviously, Deshaun Watson, the guy throwing the ball, has talked about that extensively, is kind of in a similar boat. So I think, you know, Amari, it wasn't surprising to me that, like, he obviously seems very open to the idea and excited about it today, knowing DeAndre Hopkins' resume, how much he, you know, it's not just about DeAndre helping himself, like, it would help everybody in theory if this works the right way, especially knowing his connection with Deshaun Watson. And a lot of these guys are after that first championship. Like, it's so rare and hard to come across. And I think everyone who's been in the NFL long enough kind of gets the reality of that.
Yeah. I mean, the other part about it, when Ashley mentioned it, it helps everybody. I mean, think about it. If you have DeAndre Hopkins out there on the field at the same time as Amari Cooper, you're not really going to be able to double both of them. Somebody's going to get extra coverage rolled to them, and somebody is going to be left in a one-on-one, probably pretty favorable matchup. And sometimes that's going to be Amari. So he probably sees that, you know, that it could help him, as well as, you know, maybe getting some fewer targets here and there, but it could also really benefit him.
Okay, let's take a break, and then I'll offer up my takeaways. And if we got anything else, we'll get to those as well. Welcome back to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. We are recapping the first day of mandatory minicamp in Berea. I'm going to read a quote today from Kevin Stefanski. This was in response to a question about how Deshaun Watson looked. And he said, quote, I think you've always got to be real careful. Former defensive back speaking now. 7-on-7 is geared to the offense. You should complete balls at 7-on-7. I'm the head coach, not just offense. Okay, so that being said, Mary Kay, Deshaun Watson did look really good today, and there were some really nice throws, even with Kevin Stefanski kind of tempering a little bit of the excitement there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Kevin probably doesn't want to get the Deshaun hype train rolling too soon and put too many expectations, you know, on him. I think he likes to, you know, see things happen, not necessarily hear about things happening or what's going to happen. But if you recall last week, Alex Van Pelt said that Deshaun has improved tenfold over where he was at this time last year. That's pretty lofty praise. And everybody can pretty much see it. So part of it is Deshaun's improvement. Part of it is the fact that they have significantly upgraded upgraded the receiving core with four new pass catchers, and now you've got Amari back in there. We haven't seen Amari the first 2 weeks in OTAs while he was easing his way back into lineup. So he does. He looks good. Again, temper the enthusiasm. There's no pass rush. There's no pads. There's no defense right now. So don't let this speak to Jim Schwartz's defense. Jim Schwartz will be the first one to tell you, and he did tell us this last week. We're not playing defense right now. You're not able to see what we can do. You know, we're not able to, you know, go up to a guy and make contact and bump the ball out of his hands or whatever the case may be, or tackle him, whatever. They can't do any of that right now. So it's offense advantage in a huge way, but it looks good. You know, I mean, people can start to get excited about the fact that it does look good. Let's just not put them in the Super Bowl quite yet, because it's 7-on-7s, no pads, no contact. And I mean, there's 11-on-11s too, but all the stuff that we're talking about today, you know, that was in 7-on-7s, and it looked good. He threw one touchdown pass after another, and the ball's coming out great. It's accurate. It's on the money. He puts nice touch on the ball. He can take some heat off of it. He can put it on for the moment. He's got exceptional arm talent. That's one of the things that Baker, I thought, really struggled with, was his touch on the ball in the red zone. I never really thought he had it. I didn't think he could vary the, you know, the ball speed the way that he needed to, or really place the ball in some cases on a receiver where it was most beneficial for, you know, for the receiver. Deshaun, he's got that. He's got everything that he needs to be phenomenal. And the signs are there that he's going to be really good this season.
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun is a really good quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We all remember seeing him in Houston. Nothing has really changed. He's not out of shape. He's not, you know, it's just he's been out of the game for a couple of years, which ultimately we'll see how that looks in the real deal. But it is worth noting, at least, that when you watch those videos on social media, you don't see Myles Garrett bearing down on Deshaun Watson. You know, there were plays where Miles would run a stunt with somebody and then they would stop right when they got to the line. They're not clashing with offensive linemen out there. And he is kind of sitting back there, patting the ball, kind of going through his reads. But that's part of what this is. This is, actually, we talked about this yesterday. This is a passing camp. This is all about installation. I don't even know that they've really even gone close to full speed yet. I mean, a lot of what we saw today was not quite walkthrough speed, but it certainly wasn't full speed. It was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, like we talked about off mic, Deshaun, like, had so much time to operate back there. Like, these guys are not playing at the full speed. I mean, you can see it whether you watch the defense, like, it's kind of obvious, but even in watching Deshaun and seeing how he has all the time he wants to process and get his feet set and make sure his footwork is right, which, like, I get it. It's like, that's what this time of the year is for, right? To like allow you to nail down those sort of things. But again, like, it's nowhere near full speed. Amari talked about that today. I thought it was kind of funny. He like even tried to temper expectations a little bit. And I put the quote in my story, but he said, "You have no pass rush. It's really like pitch and catch out there." And I'm like, that's such a good analogy, good baseball analogy to kind of describe what's going on, because like, it's not full speed. So I'm always like, it's better than the alternative is what I always say, right? Like, it's better than if this were to look a mess or guys were dropping passes or Deshaun was overthrowing guys. But like, those things aren't happening. So that's good. But like Mary Kay said, like, we can't put them in the Super Bowl just yet, because overall, in the grand scheme of things, it's meaningless. It's meaningless.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other side of the scale, Mary Kay, is we've been to Browns practices in the spring and in training camp where the offense has looked so bad in these very settings that you think you're watching the 2000 Ravens on defense, and it wasn't the 2000 Ravens on defense. So these balls are supposed to be completed. They're supposed to look really good. And it is meaningful because we've seen the alternative. It is meaningful that they do look good and they do look on time. It's a good sign. But like you said, let's not book those hotel rooms in Vegas just yet for early February, just based on 7-on-7s in the spring. But there are reasons certainly to feel good about this.
Yeah, there are. And, you know, people want to get excited, and I understand that. Fans want to get excited, and they should get excited, because I think it is going to all come together very, very nicely. And I think it is going to look a lot better than it did last year. But once again, I've seen horrible training camps where a team went on to win 10 games and a Browns team went on to win 10 games. I've seen, you know, amazing training camps where the Browns won 5 games or 6 or 7 games. So, you know, now is the time to, you know, to rep it, you know, to find some chemistry, to know your assignments, to get good at what you're doing. But now is not the time to make sweeping proclamations and generalizations about who is going to be able to accomplish what.
Okay, I do have one other thing. Do either of you have something? But I've got one other thing that I can throw out there if we want to talk about it. I'll just do it. Rodney McLeod spoke today, and I think, like, this kind of goes back to the discussion we were having a little bit earlier. And we've talked about Rodney in this role, but it really seems like he grasps it. Like, he is here to be one of the leaders on this defense. And he knows he's not like the guy he was in Philly, where he was starting next to Malcolm Jenkins and playing a ton of snaps. He's the third safety, and he understands that. He's going to be playing on special teams. But he also understands that he's got to be a veteran in that room and a leader in that room. And it just feels, I like that they have a guy who's 32 years old, who's won a Super Bowl, who knows Jim Schwartz really well. It just hearing him talk today just sort of reinforced everything I've thought about this signing. You know, whatever he does on the field is great, but where his real impact is going to be felt is in that locker room, because this team is so young. So just to have a few guys that are in their 30s that have been through battles, that have won at a high level, I do think that matters, Mary Kay.
I really think so too. I mean, you know, I wrote about this early on when Rodney McLeod first signed, that it reminded me of when Bill Belichick brought in a couple of his guys from the Giants that could help install the Belichick way in Pepper Johnson and Carl Banks. And I really view Rodney McLeod through that prism, through that lens. That is exactly what he is here to do. Not only can he excel on the football field, he's almost like another coach. He can, you know, help install the system, but he can also sort of like, if players, I mean, what's not going to happen is people are not going to be bitching about Jim Schwartz behind the scenes in the locker room. They're not going to do that. I mean, it's just not going to happen. It will not be tolerated. It will not be permitted. And none of that stuff is good for a football team anyways. It's toxic, and it's a cancer that can wind through a team, and it just can't happen. And when you have a guy like a Rodney McLeod, that it nips that in the bud. I mean, he will help remind these guys, look, this guy took the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl and has been a coordinator for 14 years and has put all these guys in the Pro Bowl, and here's what he can do for us, and here's how to run his system. You know what I mean? It's just, there's so many reasons why this was a good signing.
And it's just that ability to say to, you know, a Greg Newsome or whoever, you know, Grant Delpit or any of these other young guys in that secondary, or, you know, some like Greg Newsome talking about playing the slot, right? If it ends up he has to play the slot a lot, I'm sure Rodney McLeod is going to say, listen, this is just what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And if you do it well, we're going to win a Super Bowl. Like, we got a real chance to win a Super Bowl, and that's what you want. And, you know, if everybody's pulling in the same direction and this team wins, you can go get paid, and you know, you can take care of all that personal stuff. That can all still happen for you. But you know, the goal has to be team focused right now. And it just, I really do think Rodney McLeod completely understands that role, Ashley.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I talked about this on our video after practice to kind of build off of what Mary Kay was saying. Like, I think a lot of times with these guys, like, it's one thing if a coach tells them something, right? I think it means something different if they're hearing it from a player. I think it helps a new coach to have like a player who's played in his system to kind of, you know, implement technical things and X's and O's things, and to also be like that voice of reason or a mature voice, or, you know, the big brother of the unit, if you will, kind of like what Mary Kay was saying behind the scenes as well. Like, I think all of those things are really helpful. And I mean, it makes sense. Like if one of your peers is telling you, hey, like this is how you're supposed to do it, or like can actually physically show you how something is supposed to be done, sometimes it hits a little different, right? Especially for younger players who are still maturing, still learning how to be pros. And it seems like Jim Schwartz has gotten like command of that defense from everything we've seen already, right? But nothing in the NFL is ever smooth sailing, especially when you're implementing a new system. So I just think those kind of voices are really key when the defense is new, but I think, you know, mainly even from an X's and O's standpoint, it can help advance things along and work out kinks maybe a little bit faster when a guy is hearing it from another player versus a coach who's like instructing him to do something differently constantly.
Okay, I think we're set. Any other takeaways before we go here on a Tuesday? Look, we're going to do a few more of these, so if we missed anything, we'll get to them. So that'll do it for this edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We were texting today. We've got that newsletter still going out, and of course, we've got some of the stories up from minicamp today. You got to be a Football Insider subscriber to read those. So go to cleveland.com/browns, click on the blue banner at the top of the page to get that info and get signed up. Also, just make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and check out our YouTube channel. Search Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com and you'll find us. I am addicted to YouTube shorts. So I posted one today. It was minicamp in 60 seconds. I love them. They're great. So get subscribed to our YouTube channel. There's more than just me doing shorts there. There's stand-ups, there's highlights, all kinds of stuff. Again, search Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com on YouTube. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.